Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Neil Garfield Show, a presentation sponsored by www.livinglies.wordpress.com, GTC Honored, and the law firm of Garfield, Kelly & White, serving all 50 states with news and analysis of the latest bank scams against borrowers, homeowners, consumers, and investors, and providing legal representation throughout Florida. This program is for general information only. It is not a solicitation for services or legal representation and should never be used as a substitute for advice from a licensed professional. And now, here's world-renowned financial expert, attorney, and blogger, Neil Garfield.
Well, hello. This is Neil Garfield, and this is February 13th, 2014, and I'm broadcasting out of Tallahassee, Florida, brought to you by the Living Lies weblog, GTC Honors, the law firm, and the law firm of Garfield, Kelly, and White, with offices in Tallahassee and Fort Lauderdale, and brought to you also by donations to the Living Lies weblog from listeners like you. Thank you for joining us on our third show. And remember, if you miss any of our shows, you can always come to this site and download the show. Our guest tonight is my friend and co-counsel covering Miami-Dade County for GKW, Garfield, Kelly, and White, Oded Chayoud Esquire. He has been a strong fighter in the foreclosure defense sector, and we are fortunate to have him on tonight. But before that, I have a rant. Remember that starting at the end of February and continuing for about a month, I will be in South Florida in the Broward office for meetings, hearings, and presentations, and possibly a seminar. If you want to schedule something with me, please call 520-405-1688. Or 954-495-9867. Those numbers again, 520-405-1688 or 954-495-9867. The mission of my blog and this show is to get information out to the public, to lawyers, to public officials, and to the media, which seems to think that Wall Street corruption is the third rail of journalism and politics. Nobody wants to touch the banks. What is happening in the media is symptomatic of what is wrong with the government system. Bad information, poor judgment, laziness, and a failure to apply the resources necessary to investigate the entire story of sweat and tears of not just homeowners, but pensioners whose pension funds invested in those bogus mortgage bonds. The judicial system wants to clear its calendar. The increase filing fees in Florida and other places and shortened civil trial calendar for anything that smells like a foreclosure pretty much gets rid of the whole idea of due process. And they start with the presumption that the borrower defaulted instead of starting with the presumption that the investors were defrauded. And this foreclosure is just part of a continuing trend on investors who believe the lies that broker-dealers on Wall Street told them. The conclusion always seems to be the same because nobody is asking the judge to consider the alternative, or a few people are. What if the problem is not with the borrower, or only partly with the borrower, and mostly with the party who is trying to force the sale of the homeowner's home? What if the loan was made with stolen money and with reckless and intentional disregard for the source of the money? The investors who were, by all accounts, obviously defrauded every turn, starting with the representation that their money was going into a trust. Their name should have been on that note and mortgage or deed of trust, not some stand-in straw man picked by a controlled company of the broker-dealer who was defrauding investors several times per day with the same bogus mortgage bonds. People say to me, what difference does it make? We know the borrower didn't pay no matter who is owed the money. That is crazy talk. And if we adopted that as legal doctrine, then all you would need to do is spy on your neighbor, see what bills he isn't paying, and then sue him. What difference does it make that you are not owed the money? We know he didn't pay the bill, right? It's nuts. And since when we do reward people with dirty hands, for them to be rewarded for their fraudulent scheme, every time the servicer forces another case into foreclosure, it is maximizing the loss to the pension funds who thought they were buying mortgage bonds in a guarded trust and minimizing the liability of the broker-dealer to the pension fund or investor to refund the money that was stolen. Because believe it or not, most investors still don't get it. They don't realize that the money and the payment they have received and might still be receiving has nothing to do with the REMIC trust and nothing to do with the pooling and servicing agreement, because there was no contract between the investors and the servicers, the master servicer and the sub-servicer. People have asked me some questions recently. If you want to win these cases, you need good information from reliable sources who know how to defend the data if called upon to do so as a witness at trial. Most bad results come from a lack of trial experience and a lack of appellate experience. But it is true that the lawyer who actually knows the judge has an advantage. Knowing the judge is often confused, though, with having appeared before the judge very often. There are lots of people who do that. In reality, knowing the judge is just like knowing your case. You do it through experience, analysis, research, and deduction, and you investigate. If you know you're going to be in front of a judge that is consistently antithetical to any order or judgment in favor of a borrower, then you try the case to make a great record on appeal. But then that is supposed to be what you do anyway. The problem is most pro se litigants, and for that matter, 95% of all lawyers who go to court, are quite dim and faded on the subject of when to object, how to preserve an issue for appeal, and when to make a motion for involuntary dismissal. Thus, the bias of the trial court gets affirmed because few lawyers remember that they must actually point to something in the record and say, there, that is where the trial court made an error. Most cases are lost at the trial level for the same reason: giving up, filing admissions instead of denials, and failing to file the right affirmative defense is exactly what the banks want in order to avoid a spate of appellate decisions that would basically question the premise of most foreclosure litigation. And that premise is, as we know, isn't it obvious that the borrower will and should lose? After all, he borrowed the money, didn't he? What would the world come to if we allowed borrowers to go scot-free based upon some technicality? Lending would stop, as would commerce and everything that requires liquidity for transactions to be completed. And that's why so many cases are lost. But before I get to that, let me say that you hear horror stories, but you don't hear about the tens of thousands of cases where homeowners have gotten their house free and clear, have gotten damages, have gotten attorney's fees, or gotten or received settlements and modifications that was to their satisfaction. Why don't you hear about them? Because nearly all of them are done through settlements that are under seal of confidentiality. I have seen many of them in my files as a member of the press, as an expert, and as an attorney. But if I breathe one word about who and what and where and when, the homeowner loses the house, waives his defenses, and then pays fees. So even in front of the hardest judge, the best effort should be made to win the case on the merits. Of course, you need a lawyer that actually believes that you can and should win. And that is where we come in, and people like Oded, who will be talking in a moment, schooling the lawyer not just on documents, procedure, and rules of evidence, but more importantly on the actual transactions leading up to the point where the borrower signed documents that ended up in favor of people who never laid out a dime. And this prevents the borrower from asking the real lender for a deal that works out the balance and the legal deficiencies of the loan. So the game is on. Both sides take an all-or-nothing position, and usually the borrower loses because his lawyer failed to describe any scenario why his client should win, and the other side is simply corrupt. When you dispel the notion that the right borrower, the right lender, and the right balance are an issue and make them real issues in dispute, the trial courts do take notice. If the homeowner becomes the aggressor instead of the timid defender, trial court does take notice. These judges do notice that. And the appellate courts see not only the error of a biased judge, but the reason why a homeowner could and maybe should win. So there are a lot of things that you need to check on when you are developing your case. Too often I see cases when there have been too many errors made before it got to me. And I think Odette is going to tell you the same thing. This show will highlight some of the skills that lawyers should have, and some people who are good trial and appellate attorneys and who understand at least the basics of securitization of debt. I'd like to introduce now my friend and colleague, Odette Hayoud. I will ask a question about motion practice and how that relates to appellate issues on appeal. Odette, first of all, welcome. I'm very pleased to have you on the show. And if you would, please give your telephone number for people to be able to reach you directly.
Good evening, Neil, and thank you for inviting me to the show. My phone number is 305-281-8566. And yes, go ahead.
Okay, so my question, which I just gave a little preview to, is there's two areas that I think you're particularly strong in, and one is motion practice, and the other is appellate practice. And I wonder if you would give a clue as to how those two interrelate and what makes somebody good at motion practice and good at appellate practice.
Well, in my personal experience, the way it happened to me is the appellate practice made me better motion practice and better litigator. And the only reason is I understood that in every motion practice and in every litigation, you need to look at the case and see and make sure that you have the most important issues that you need to preserve on appeal. I don't believe that I'm going to for litigation with an intent to lose the case. However, we always have to think about if you win the case, you win the case. You're done. But just in case, when you're losing the case, you need to make sure that all the strong issues that you want for the Court of Appeal to be heard are preserved by you during the motion practice and the litigation practice.
So give me an example of how you would do that. If you were in a motion, let's say, which frequently happens, if you are moving to dismiss the complaint in a judicial state like Florida, and you have found a deficiency in the complaint or the exhibits, how would you preserve the issue for appeal?
First of all, if there is a deficiency in the complaint, you need to file a motion to dismiss right away. Don't think about filing an answer, because filing an answer just making the case ready for trial. You need to file a motion to dismiss under the guise that complaint is defective. And if the complaint is defective, then the bank, who is the plaintiff, basically failed to file a complaint that can move on, or basically invoking the appropriate jurisdiction, because the complaint is defective. Therefore, the motion to dismiss is very important, especially now in the reality that the entire mortgage foreclosure cause of action became an assembly line. When there is a motion to dismiss, judges don't even listening to you. They just deny your motion and require you to file an answer. But once you file the motion to dismiss, it is a part of the record, and you can bring it up in your appellate, in your initial appellate brief or reply brief or whatever appellate brief that you're filing, and say, this is what happened in the motion to dismiss, and this is why the judge denied, and this is why it was wrong. Therefore, it is very important to pay attention to every little detail.
You know, one of the things that happens to me when I'm talking with my clients who are hiring me as an expert witness or as a lawyer or whatever, is that they don't actually understand, and unfortunately I've run across this with lawyers too, that they don't actually understand what an appeal is. They think it's a chance to retry the case. Would you comment on that?
Well, that is wrong. That is the assumption that you can go to the Court of Appeal and retry the case. It is wrong. The Court of Appeals will not listen to you. The Court of Appeals, the name states, it's an appeal from what happened in the trial court. You need to say, this is what went wrong, and this is why I believe it is wrong, and this is why I believe the Court of Appeal need to reverse the order and send it back to the trial court to retry the case. The Court of Appeals never retry the case. There are several standard of issues. You know what? Before I'm going to the standard of issues, let me go back a couple of steps. Court of Appeals are basically reviewing the work of the trial court. That is it. That is it. They do not retry a case. Now, when they are reviewing the trial court's work, there are several standards of review, and I'm not going to go into it because that will take about, it's like a law school course. But there are several.
We got 10 minutes left. But
yeah, there are several standards of review, and you need to choose the right one, and you need to make sure that you're pointing out the mistakes. That is why the Court of Appeals is very important, because they're not retrying. They're just saying to the trial court, you made a mistake, redo it.
I understand. The other question when it comes to motion practice is you and I have both been to and seen the Rocket Docket in Dade and Broward County, and I've seen it in many other places as well. My feeling is that the Rocket Docket, as they call it, is merely an abridgment of due process. And I think we're getting to the point where a federal challenge to the state would be appropriate in terms of the Rocket Docket, because of the presumption behind the way they rule. They're not being fair to both sides. They're just assuming that what difference does it make? The borrower is going to lose anyway. Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, my thought on that is the Rocket Docket violates the due process rights in the fact that when judges get a mortgage foreclosure cause of action, they're already leaning towards the bank because, hey, listen, the guy didn't pay his payment. They forget to place the burden of proof on the bank because they are filing the mortgage foreclosure cause of action, and therefore they have to prove that there is a debt, there is that the borrower signed the mortgage. They need to prove the notice of intent to accelerate. All of these things, the burden of proof is on the bank. However, in a lot of judges, when they get a mortgage foreclosure cause of action, they impermissibly and basically they're just moving the burden of proof on the borrower. Show me that you did pay the mortgage, and therefore it's a violation of the due process, and we just need one brave person to take it to the federal court.
Well, there's a number of people around the country that are looking at that, including me, and I'm even considering the possibility of taking some of the leaders in foreclosure litigation and maybe forming a group where we file on behalf of several homeowners. And the challenge, I think, is for people to accept, and even the borrowers themselves, I've had this issue, to accept the fact that maybe should win, and maybe they can win, because the debt here is not really owned by the party that is trying to enforce it against them. And the thing that I have revealed a number of times is that the reason why there's a rush to foreclosure is that if they can maximize the loss of the investors whose money they took, then they minimize their own liability to those investors. And they try to get out of the fraudulent aspects of the transaction, which started on Wall Street and for some reason is ignored all the way down at the trial level. But when you, the thing I'll ask you to comment on is that when you start talking about fraud and that kind of thing, especially on the Rocket Docket, seems to me the judges regard you as some kind of fringe conspiracy theorist rather than listening to what you really have to say. Is that
well,
your theory?
That's exactly my point, because when the judges already get the mortgage foreclosure file in front of them, they already predisposed against the borrower. They, a lot of the times in motion for summary judgment and trials, the judge just accepts the admission of the evidence as it is without listening to objections. Many times when you have a witness that has no knowledge, none whatsoever, regarding the file or regarding the loan, and the judge accepts that testimony as is, and move it forward towards judgment against the borrower. And my personal belief is because they are predisposed. My second personal belief is the banks have more money, and they see it every day, and that is it. So the Court of Appeals is very important. It is very important to put the trial courts in track, and we won several cases on appeal. We won several cases, and more than that, there were several cases that were resolved in settlements because the opposing counsel realized that they have no case. So I totally agree with you on this one, Neil.
That's why we use you in appellate work, my firm, and why we have an alliance for you to cover Miami-Dade area. Your knowledge of motion practice and appellate issues is quite impressive, and I like working with you, and I think that you make a very good impression in both the trial court and the appellate court. I guess the last question that we have time for is whether you would share with us some of the one or two of the most common errors that you've seen on the rocket docket in terms of what the attorney representing the homeowner has done, without naming names.
The common mistake is when it comes to trial is lack of proper voir dire of the witness from the bank. Most of them do not know what's going on in the case.
Okay. And for the purposes of the audience, voir dire is an examination of the witness before he testifies to determine whether or not personal knowledge that he can testify to. Just being able to read from documents that have been handed to him does not make him competent to testify. Go ahead, Oded.
The second common mistake that I've seen is basically motion for summary judgment. Motion for summary judgment states very clearly that when the bank is moving for summary judgment, they must show that there is no issue of material fact. And it's like they have to show 100% that they are entitled to judgment. And the common mistake is that attorneys for the defendants do not attack the affidavits because the affidavits are hearsay, most of them, and they do not address the issue of default in specificity, and they do not address the issue of acceleration in specificity, which they are required to. They're just saying, oh, they're at default, or we send a letter, but they do not address those issues. And once you raise those issues, you must raise them for an appeal purposes.
Well, that's about all the time we have. Actually, we have run out of time here on this show, and I want to thank Oded and all the people who have contributed to this show in terms of ideas and what needs to be discussed. We will, if it's Thursday, it's the Neil Garfield Show. This show will be on every Thursday night at 6. And if we did not get to any of your questions on the chat room, which we didn't, I forgot to turn on until two-thirds of the way through the show, we will try to get to those before too long. So thank you, and Oded, thank you for being here, and good night.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Neil.
Thanks for listening to our broadcast. We hope that you tell your friends about us and let them know that there is hope and help in this financial crisis. Tune in every week to The Neil Garfield Show for free information and advice, and visit our blog daily at The Living Lies Blog. We provide support services, the latest strategies, analysis, expert consultations, testimony, and declarations to use in your battle against the largest economic crime in human history. For information concerning Neil, the team at Living Lies, or the law firm, go to www.livinglies.wordpress.com or call 520-405-1688. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the host and should not be attributed to any other person or entity.